Estadio Azteca. And then the popcorn lady stands right in front of you before the PK shot.
You know, but it's his fault because he's yelling aguas.
Aguas.
In Spanish, that's like, watch out. But it's also like, hey, where are the waters at? Like,
plus, I mean, the stadium is not packed. Bro, you can't move. You can't move.
Welcome to Football Americas! You know, that's never happened before, but that is peak CONCACAF at its finest. No Sebi Salazar again. My man gets paid too much on vacation.
Yeah.
Man. But Mauricio Pedrosa, the DP, is here in his place. Mau,
what's up, everyone? Happy to be here. I've been to Estadio Azteca many times, and I was never obstructed by Popcorn Lady. Good offer. On popcorn, by the way. I was, 60 pesos.
I was going to say, usually when I've been to Estadio Azteca and I hear aguas, aguas, I'm ducking.
Yeah, you got to dodge. That's about right. All right, fun show for this Thursday. We'll have a one-on-one with Alfonso Davis coming up. He's going to play the Clásica on ABC. We'll go to that. And a very nice recap of what has happened in the U.S. Open Cup. Some cup sets. I love that one. I love the cup sets.
Who coined that, by
my,
the way?
My favorite word of the day.
Okay.
Let's get things started. Both the U.S. Men's National Team and Mexico announced venues for their respective friendly matches that will serve as preparation for both the CONCACAF Nations League, but also for the 2022 World Cup in Qatar. The U.S. will host Morocco at the TQL Stadium in Cincinnati, Ohio. That's on June 1st. Mexico will play three matches in U.S. territory against Nigerian Dallas, then Uruguay. That game will be played in Glendale, Arizona, and then Ecuador, June 5th in Chicago. So, Herc, let's start with the UN's men's national team. Are you cool that they're going back to Cincinnati to play this game against Morocco?
No, I'm not cool with it. Listen, Ohio has treated the U.S. men's national team very well. It's been a fortress. That's where they feel like they have a home field advantage. But you've already qualified. There's no need to head back to Ohio, as grateful as you are, assuming that you have to play in the United States. This is a very big country. 50 states, spread the love. It's literally what the game is about. It's the mission statement for U.S. soccer is to grow the game. Take it out of Ohio. Take it out of Minnesota. Take it out of Florida. Take it to places that you've never been. There are a lot of different U.S. men's national team fans out there, all types of walks of life, all types of backgrounds and diversities, most who will never get a chance to see their national team unless you go to them. You've already qualified. The most difficult thing has already passed. Now share the game, spread the wealth.
All right, help me out here, because we'll want to talk about Mexico in a moment, but I want to understand the reasoning behind taking this game to this specific cities, to this specific states. Why is that Ohio is such an important location for the U.S. men's national team and U.S. soccer?
Well, if we're talking about sporting reasons, it's because where they've generated the best results.
Yeah, but it's a friendly match.
But it's a friendly match. If we're talking about other reasons, well, I think it's a business matter, right? If you build a stadium and it's an MLS stadium and then some comes into play, U.S. soccer comes into play, maybe there are some treaties, and I don't have any proof of evidence of this, but I would lead me to believe, like, maybe they said, hey, we will put a game here in the future. But think about all these different states, underserved communities, underserved footballing cultures you can get to. Look at all the great, look what the Open Cup has taught us. All these great undercover, hidden under rocks, and I shouldn't even say rocks, hidden gems that are these soccer footballing communities. Take them there, grow the game there. Don't just isolate it to what is Ohio, to what is Florida, to what is Minnesota. You could say whatever you want, but the mission statement about U.S. soccer is to grow the game.
Yeah, this is nothing against the beautiful state of Ohio. I was there with you for the U.S. Men's National Team versus Mexico World Cup qualifier game. It was my first time watching a game like that under those circumstances, and I thought the atmosphere was outstanding.
Right.
I mean, hats off to the crowd in Cincinnati. I mean, me being Mexican and attending that game, I thought about the Mexican players, and I was like, yeah, this is intimidating. This does feel like a World Cup qualifier game. But when you talk about friendly matches, preparation for either CONCACAF Nations League or the World Cup, you want to have more states involved, right? It's and Mexico, we have a saying for the national team, el equipo de todos. Everybody's team, right? It's not Ohio's team.
Listen, beautiful, it's not Florida's beautiful little team. Beautiful little stadium, but it's still a very beautiful little stadium. Take it to bigger stadiums. Spread the wealth. Take it to places you've never been to. Alaska, Hawaii. Take it to North Dakota. Take it to Idaho. I don't care. Spread the wealth. The mission of U.S. soccer should be to grow the game. That includes the U.S. men's national team. All walks of life, all different diversities and backgrounds should have the opportunity to see their nation play as well.
All right, let's talk about Mexico. And let me just go ahead here. And I'm not cool with the fact that the Mexican national team will play all of their friendly matches before the World Cup in U.S. territory. Again, this has nothing to do against the large, great, enthusiastic crowd of Mexican fans in the United States of America. But if we go back to recent history, why has the Mexican national team not played friendly matches in the last 2 years in Mexico? I know we all know the main reason, which is money. This is a dollars versus Mexican pesos contest, and that is actually a no contest. But if we want to believe that this is el equipo de todos, everybody's team, you know the last time the Mexico played a friendly match outside of Estadio Azteca? It was 2 years ago in Toluca, which is still part of the large territory of Mexico City. I know it's a different state, but still part in the same territory.
That was a Nations League game, if I remember Bermuda. Yes, I understand what you're saying. We also have to put into context there has been a pandemic. We're still currently in a pandemic, and that affected. But this isn't an isolated incident. It wasn't like the pandemic came in and things changed. That's what it's been like before, and it's the bottom dollar, Mauricio. Now, I'm curious about this because I was born here in the States, and I'm of Mexican immigrant parents, and I see the way the Mexican Federation, some peddle the Mexican national team and sell the nostalgic state of what is the Mexican supporter, and they sell it for big dollars. You, as somebody who now works here in the U.S., you as somebody who's lived and covered this country, this national team for many, many years, what do you feel when they don't give those in Mexico the opportunity to see their own national team?
If I'm speaking as a fan, I resent that. And the current relationship between the national team and the fans is not ideal. We've had El Grito, right? And then we had the words from Héctor Herrera saying that the Mexican fans are probably not doing their job when the team plays there. They're not putting pressure on opposing team. The fans resented that. And we've watched many games. If things don't go well for the Mexican national team, the fans will start booing. And I think that's one of the reasons
that
the executives, maybe the coaching staff, they don't want the crowd to start booing the players. I wanna place this difference, and I don't know if you agree with me on this. When the Mexican national team plays a friendly match in Mexico, right? The level or the average fan, it's going to be demanding a good show. It's going to be demanding a good performance from the team. It's not the same. It's not the same here in the States.
Are you telling me the fan that comes out to the Juego Moleros that pays top dollar is not demanding?
They're not as demanding as the crowd back in Mexico.
Are you telling me they're not? No, you know what they're not? I say this with all due respect because I've seen it many times. I've seen the Mexican national team go to here a game in the United States, these Juego Moleros, and they're going to play against a C team, a Croatia C team at AT&T Stadium, and they're going to fill up the stadium.
Yes.
The stadium's going to be packed. That crazy stadium is going to be packed. But they go to the hotel, and they're asking for Chucky Lozano. They're asking for Raul Jimenez. They're asking for Memo Ochoa. And then they come and find out they're not even in the squad that game.
No, and during the game, if they start playing Cielito Lindo, everybody's going to start singing along. If they start playing the mariachi loco on the PA announcing system, people are going to be, they go there for the party of watching the Mexican national team.
The nostalgia. Yeah. Yes.
And finally, it's not cool. They have to go back. Speaking of partidos moleros, El Tata Martino has announced the roster for the match against Guatemala. This is a 20-player roster. And when you start taking a look at the names, what's the first thing that stands out for you?
I know a lot of people are going to say Jonathan Gomez. That's not the first thing that stands out to me. This is almost expected. He stated himself many times. He's keeping that open. So don't freak out on either side. Don't get too excited. Don't get too bummed. Relax. He's only 18. Big decision for him. It's, for me, Alejandro Sendejas. When you talk about a player, this guy who's Juarez born, El Paso bred. I don't know what's in the water in El Paso, but they are churning out some footballers, some very good football players. 24 years of age, 6 goals last year, comes to America, heavily criticized move to America. Yes. Many were like, he's not an America type of player, and he leads America with goals.
Former Chivas player,
former FC Dallas product, again, FC Dallas. This player, 24 years of age, who played on the youth national teams with players like Christian Pulisic right now, one of the bright stars for Club America. He can play out wide. He's been playing as an interior. Yeah. Very good for his size in the air. He's only 5'7". Good rematador, good header of the ball. He seems to be a very good, balanced player. So the guy who got called in, this is the one that stands out. Now, there's also Vigón, who did not get called in, who, you know, that's a big head scratcher.
No Vigón, no Victor Guzmán, no Alan Mosso, but there's a reason for that, because Pumas will play the CONCACAF Champions League final against hosting Seattle Sounders first leg. So to me, I mean, I think it's a no-brainer. It's a no-brainer. It's my boy.
Who's your boy?
Flores.
Oh, Marcelo.
Marcelo Flores is on this roster. And I wrote down a list of demands for Tata Martino now that he's going to have the chance to hang out with Marcelo Flores during the next couple of weeks. All right, here we go. Number one, he has to be given the number 10 jersey, right? Number
what
one.
What are you doing?
Number two, he has to be named captain of
what
this squad.
Doing?
And number three, and most important, he has to be assured that he will be included in the 26-player roster for the 2022 World Cup in Qatar.
He's not even played first team football, and you already want to guarantee him the 10
jersey.
Okay, let me tell you, Tata Martino has made a mistake.
He's made many mistakes.
No, but getting it to this point.
Yeah.
Marcelo Flores, to this point right now, now you're going to play him in a Juego Molero against Guatemala where you should win, you should rout, and you probably will. And he may feature in that. Do you know what the hype will be around this guy when he does feature like that? There have only been a select few players that have taken that step of national team before first team.
Yep.
With the Mexican national team. And those players are Giovanni Dos Santos, the Dos Santos brothers, Giovanni Dos Santos, Jonah Dos Santos, and Carlos Vela. All very good national team careers. Gio Dos Santos, you could argue, has a top 5 national team career. Okay, big players.
Yeah,
big
okay.
Players.
Okay.
He's leaving it now in these games that they don't mean anything.
No, they're not important.
They're not important, and you can easily rout the opponent. He could be creating a bigger monster than he thought.
Yeah, I think he's made for that kind of pressure. I don't think he minds that pressure.
No, I'm talking about Tata.
Oh, Tata Martino. Oh, yeah, no doubt.
I'm talking about Marcelo.
That's big pressure on Tata Martino. The last time, I was trying to think, when was the last time that we hyped a player starting for the national team?
You typed Diego Lainez.
No, you know, I had to go all the way back to Nery Castillo. Nery Castillo. 2007.
Nery Castillo was playing in Europe.
He was playing in Europe. Okay. Marcelo Flores is playing in Europe.
First division in Europe.
He was a dual national. We already had Mikel Arteta talking about Marcelo Flores. Come on. That's got to mean something.
The dual national get called up for Greece as well, so there's a bit more like, hey. Well, actually, he's a dual national as well.
Well, by the way, I talked with a reporter who asked Mikel Arteta that question, and then he said that off the record, Mikel Arteta is very pleased with Marcelo Flores. All right. Let's move on. Let's run it back. Speaking of Mexican national team players, my goodness, he is back. Tecatito Corona scored for the first time as a Sevilla player. He actually scored twice. He hadn't scored in league play since January 29th of last year. He's looked really good since joining Sevilla, Herc. Why?
Because he's confident. I mean, how obvious is this turnaround? Look at both goals,
at
by the
finish.
Way, in the box.
Yes.
Almost like a second number 9. He's more of a dribbler, more of a wide player, but he's showing he could step in the line. He's showing he could play the box area very well. When he was at Porto, you remember the blacklisted players, how everything started with Tata Martino? He was actually one of the originals.
That's right.
Remember Jose Conceição getting upset because he didn't want him to take a transatlantic flight to just go see El Tri and Tata Martino. Tata Martino got upset, then it became upset with Jose Conceição, then upset with Tecatito Corona. It was a toxic environment. He's happy now. He's playing. He's thriving. He's playing with a coach who knows him, a coach who values him, a coach who actually plays him. And Tecatito Corona, for the better part of, I would say, the last 6-7 years, has been a very consistent player. Sans this year. He's doing it right now with Sevilla. He's showing us what we've always seen.
Yeah, we had a conversation with Moises Llorens earlier this Thursday on Ahora o Nunca. He's La Liga insider for ESPN. And he mentioned something that really concerned me, that there's a chance that Julen Lopetegui will not be Sevilla's manager for next season. If that's the case, that's going to be a big problem for Tecatito Corona, because Lopetegui was crucial in Sevilla signing him. If Lopetegui stays, then I'm very confident that we'll finally have heard a very good Tecatito Corona, a Tecatito Corona in a very good form for the World Cup, something that we don't really necessarily have seen in his national team history.
Yeah, I'm still okay because of their history, because of Sevilla and the club that they are. I think they will get a good coach no matter what, and he's a good player no matter what. He's going to prove it. He seems to be that type of player. He proved that at Porto when he had an opportunity to play. He's proven it here in the brief time in Sevilla.
Yeah, so it's good to see him doing well like that. It's only an internet rumor, amplified, by the way, by Marca, about the possibility of Raul Jimenez joining Bayern Munich in the summer. It's not clear that Robert Lewandowski will re-sign with Bayern. Barcelona will make a push to get him. And if that happens, what's the likelihood, Herc, that Raul replaces Robert Lewandowski at Bayern?
Yeah, Marca running with this one. So will we then. We will talk about
sure,
it.
Sure, of course.
He's 30 years old, right? If you would have told me this was 2 years ago when he was A, younger, and B, at the height of his playing career when he was so good. He had a crazy 18 months before that very unfortunate injury with David Luiz in November of 2020. Before that, I would have said, crazy possibility. Absolutely. Yes, this could actually make sense because he was at that playing level. He's not at that playing level right now. He's not at the playing level right now. He's not at the confidence level right now. He's 30 years old. He's got 6 goals this year in the Premier League. A lot of those out of the penalty spot. He's not the same player as of yet. I have a hard time, not because he's not a good player. I think if you put him in, he's not going to stand out. Like, he's not going to be out of place. You know, he's a good player. But at 30 years old and Bayern Munich, the ability to go out and get anybody they want in the world, I see this as a stretch.
So if I had read that report, a rumor, without that final words, replaces Lewandowski, I might have had a better chance of believing the whole thing. Raul Jimenez, if he ever signs for Bayern, I don't think he will be the one player that Oliver Kahn or Hasan Salihamidzic, the sporting directors for the club, are thinking to replace one of the best, if not the best, number nine in the world. Choupo-Moting was supposed to be that guy, and he hasn't seen much minutes because Robert Lewandowski never comes out of it. He plays every single minute because he wants to break every single record. Now, if Lewandowski leaves and there's another big-time number nine for Bayern, but also they want someone to give some quality minutes, then I think there's a chance that there's some truth to these rumors, but not player for player, not Raul Jimenez, especially because of his age, replacing Robert Lewandowski.
Yeah, if this was 2 years ago when he was at the height of his career, when honestly his name was being circulated with the best players in the world, maybe.
Yeah, okay, this is not a rumor. It is actually a report from the Washington Post reporter Stephen Goff. He tweeted that DC United has exchanged proposals with Gareth Bale's agent to join the club on a free transfer. His Real Madrid contract expires this summer. If that happens, would he then be the best player in the region, Herc?
Absolutely, Major League Soccer, Liga MX, whatever you want to put any league up here, he would be the best player. He's only 32 years of age, and I know what many are saying. Wait a second, but he's not even played for Real Madrid.
Yes, he doesn't. I would
play
say that
for Real Madrid because contractual stuff, because he's in a fight right there contractually. When he played at Tottenham, he's a very good player. And did you not see him play against Austria in that World Cup qualifier in the playoff? He's an insane man on the field. he would be the best player in Major League Soccer by far. Okay. He would be the best player in Liga MX. If you don't see it, it's because you're choosing to acknowledge it and you're bringing in ignorance. This is a very good player. Okay. So wow. Very good age.
Wow.
No, no. Yes. And if DC, that's the only thing, caveat here. If DC gets him, I'd be a little shocked. But if he can come to Major League Soccer, automatically.
All right, then allow me to bring ignorance into the conversation. Allow me to ignore what you just said. If this Kern, Gareth Bale, comes to Major League Soccer, he would not be even the best player in the league. If this Gareth Bale comes, let me ask you a question. That famous banner, right? That famous banner. Wales, Golf, Madrid.
You know who he is?
If that's the case, where does DC United stand there in that on that banner? Is it DC United, Wales, and Golf? Golf, Wales, DC United? Where do you think his priorities are going to be?
You're talking about a guy who scored more goals than Ronaldo at Madrid.
Yeah, he hasn't scored in a while, by the way.
He's won 4 Champions League. This is still a very good player. We've seen it as briefly as 3 weeks ago, destroying Austria. He may go
with
to the
Wales?
World Cup
sure.
And the U.S. men's national team. Yes, with Wales. Yeah. His country. U.S. Yeah. men's national team group. And if he's in the group of the U.S. men's national team, I am telling you, I am afraid for the U.S. men's national team. I'm afraid for England. He's such a good player. He would be the best player in this region. Who are you going to say is the best player if it's not him?
I can make a list. I think Chicharito will be in better form than Gareth Bale, by the way. He would be in better form than Gareth Bale. I have no question. Lorenzo Insigne will come to Toronto. Lorenzo Insigne would definitely be a better player than Gareth Bale. Now, every single example that you're bringing to the conversation has to do with his national team. If he's not motivated, right? He plays for Real Madrid, one of the most, if not the most, historic club in soccer. What is going to motivate him, right? To play for DC United. Where is he going to find his motivation?
This baffles me when players say, when he wants to, if he's motivated.
that's the case.
Just retire if you're not motivated. You think he's hurting for money? Really think Gareth Bale is hurting for money?
No.
You don't think he would rather sit on a golf course somewhere if he didn't want to play? We have to, everybody, and this isn't just, I'm not talking to you, Mal. Okay. Everybody, stop with the... He wants to go play golf. He's not.
Yes,
motivated.
He wants to go play golf. He does.
Get out of here.
He does.
Seriously. Take yourself seriously for a second. This is a professional footballer, a very
is
good
he?
once in a generation type of player that you were having doubts
Let
about
me ask
playing
you this.
In Major League Soccer.
Has he behaved?
We're having doubts about him playing in Major League Soccer.
Let me ask you this:
wow.
Has he behaved as a professional club player as of recent? Has he behaved as a professional player recently with
Look
Real
at his
Madrid?
Resume.
He has not. The
Look
answer
at his
is
resume.
He has not. No, he has not. DC United doesn't need that, by the way. Are there any good golf courses around the DC United area? Or facilities
I'm sure
or something?
They are.
Yeah, okay. Well, that's good for them. All right. Bad news regarding U.S. Men's National Team players and injuries. Hoffenheim announced that Chris Richards is out for the season with a thigh injury. Likely, that ends his tenure with the club. He's there on loan from FC Bayern München. This only adds hurt to a long list of U.S. Men's National Team players that have struggled with injuries lately.
Yeah, he got injured with the U.S. men's national team, and this could be something that lingered over. Maybe he's compensating. But it is another injury, and it's unfortunate because as you look at the names there, Weston McKennie, Giovanni Reyna, Matt Turner, Chris Richards, Sergiño Dest, Daryl Dike, Brendan Aaronson, it is an exclusive list, and it seems to be growing and growing. But these are also young players.
Yeah.
And what I will stress is these little things, soft tissue, et cetera, they happen to every footballer. It's going to happen. They need to learn how to roll with these punches.
Blessing in disguise that the World Cup is not played in the summer, right?
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
The good, the bad, and the ugly. courtesy of the third round of the U.S. Open Cup. We'll start with the good. Union Omaha becomes the first U.S. League One team, USL League One team, to defeat an MLS team. They took Chicago Fire to PKs and knocked them out of the competition.
Yeah, the Owls.
The Owls, what a name.
The Owls to the homies, the Union Omaha team. This is looking like it's going to be Chicago, right? It looks like it's going to be Chicago. They're going to get a 2-1 victory here. No, my man Alex, touche. Is it touche or touche? I do not know. But watch this.
I'll say
121 minutes. Go ahead, 122 minutes.
Yes.
We're going to send in a penalty kicks. These are the defending USL League One champions.
That's right.
That's like, what, Tier 3, third division, the old D3. I'm a D3 USL alumni. Take them to the house, homies. Come on. Penalty kicks. Low standing. Oh, you got it.
Game played at Soldier Field. We can only imagine what it means for these players that moment. Good for them. Good for the Owls. My college team was also called the Owls, Los Bulls. Now, the bad, we no longer have amateur teams. Both the two remaining were eliminated. FC Motown and NC Fusion Under 23, both out of the U.S. Open Cup.
Yeah, this is right here is the Carolina team against the Richmond Kickers. That one, unfortunately, they lost to Richmond Kickers.
Yeah.
Both teams took their pro opponents to the brink. The Fusion gave up the deciding goal 118th minute, and then FC Motown. This one hurts because they lost to the Rochester Rhinos. Oh, I'm sorry, New York. It's not the Rhinos anymore. No. I hate that. They should have kept the Rhino name. They ended up losing, but more power to them for getting this far.
Rhinos is actually not a better name than the Owls, if you ask me.
No. They should have kept the Rhinos. They should have kept their history.
I mean, it sounds cool, but the Owls, much better. No more amateur teams in the Cup. And the Ugly. First of all, the name is amazing. Cup sets. Four Major League Soccer Cup sets. Columbus Crew, Chicago Fire, Real Salt Lake, and Austin FC are out of the Cup.
All right, this is ugly. Let me tell you why this is ugly, okay? There are 103 teams, I believe, in this year's edition of the U.S. Open Cup. It's such a special tournament. Amateur teams, fourth division, third division, second division, MLS, they're all going to play against each other. Major League Soccer gets a pass until the third round, okay? That means everybody else plays more games than you.
Yeah, this is the third round.
That means if you want to win a trophy, you've got six games to do it. Six games to win a trophy. There are MLS teams that in their miserable existence have never won a trophy. You have six games to lift the trophy. And yet some teams don't take it seriously, or some teams take the opposition lightly. They don't realize how much U.S. soccer has grown, how much the lower divisions have grown in culture and sophistication and playing ability, and then this happens to you. It's six games, Mal. Six games, take it seriously. Serious clubs, they want to win trophies. Six games, and you lose to these teams. More power to these teams, more power to lower division football, because they are taking it seriously.
Yeah, six games in the span of 7 months, so you can actually take the time to play seriously, right? That's all we ask for. Take it seriously.
You know what six games are? The amount of games Matias Almeida and San Jose Earthquakes can lose in a month. That's all it takes.
That was probably uncalled for, but okay, we'll take that. The San Antonio-Austin game decided in the 96th minute. That's the game winner. San Antonio knocking Austin FC out of the Open Cup. All right, let's move on. By the way, awesome scenes looking at the crowd. This is what it's going to look like. The round of 32 matches will be played May 10th.
Yeah, oh, by the way, the winner of the Open Cup, 300K.
Yeah.
That's more than MLS Cup for the championship. That's more than you get for winning MLS Cup. Six games!
Not bad at all. And here we have the rest of the games. These are the games that will be played May 11. Remember, there's a regional draw still in this phase of the tournament.
As our good friend Sebastian Salazar pointed out on social media, heartbreaker that there isn't more of these MLS versus, you know, USL lower division team matchups.
I agree. I'm rooting, by the way, for Rochester, New York. That's my team. The Rhinos.
They're not the Rhinos.
The Rhinos. That's going to be my team from now on.
The Rhinos.
All right. According to sources, Carlos Vela and LAFC have reached an agreement on a contract extension at least until the end of the 2023 season. He would reportedly remain on the roster as a designated player. No more details on the salary or if the contract extension is actually past the 2023 season. At least one, two more seasons for Carlos Vela at LAFC. No surprises here, right?
Well, let's reserve judgment until we get the contract details, but
sure.
The way he was playing, the way Carlos Vela was playing, 4 goals, 2 assists, looking like the Carlos Vela of old, and I'm not even talking about the goals and assists, I just mentioned them, but if you look at that LA Galaxy game, he's looking more and more like his normal self. That's a good thing for Major League Soccer.
So we called the game on Sunday. I don't still believe he's 100% where he wants to be. But I see a motivated Carlos Vela, unlike Gareth Bale. I see a committed Carlos Vela and playing different positions on the field. Now, my question to you is it still smart to have him as a designated player? He's not going to accept everything else, of course, but do you believe LAFC is making the right decision here?
Well, given the circumstances, I mean, you leave him out for the next 6 months, and what do you do with that DP spot? There are very intricate mechanisms where if a player is gone for 6 months or comes in for 6 months, it counts for the next year. All these crazy loopholes. Trust me, I dealt with it when I was in Major League Soccer. So given the circumstances of what we know, it makes sense. And he's playing at a high level. He can get better, yes, because yeah. We've seen the best of him. 34 goals, 15 assists in a historic 2019 season. But this is more of the Carlos Vela that we're used to seeing. So, yes.
Yeah, started the season with a bang with a hat-trick on their first game. More Major League Soccer news. DC United fired their manager, Hernán Losada. Only 6 games into the season, the team had lost 4 games in a row, last place in the Eastern Conference. Surprise, Herc, by the timing of the firing here?
By the timing of the firing, yes. Now, people can say, and we've seen reports, Palomaro of The Athletic has reported very well, of sources claiming that there was friction between Losada
yep.
and players, Losada and upper management. That is fine, okay? I can accept that, and maybe that is a part of the element of why he left. But you gave Ben Olsen 10 years. 10 years of a team that was just there, irrelevant. And Losada is gone after one season, or not even 1 year, I should say, not even a full season. You don't give him time to implement his style, his players, his way. Pull the rug from underneath. You've heard Julian Gressel. I heard his podcast. He explains very well. Losada expected a lot of things out of his players, both on the field and off the field. More professionalism, high maintenance, high style of play. It was very rough for those players. Very Bielsa running those players into the ground. I will say this then to the DC brass, Casper and co. What are you doing? What'd you think would happen? Like, Major League Soccer is a very physical league. Do you think that DC United was going to run everybody into the ground, that you knew something that everybody else did not, that you were going to get these things going in under a year, that Losada was going to be the man and he was going to light the league on fire with this amazing roster that you put out, a playoff roster, they call it. That's what you want to give your fans, a playoff roster. That is the bar. So it's not surprising. I jokingly called them last season the San Jose of the East, and it very much looks that way.
Well, San Jose and now DC United both have fired their managers early in the season. My only question is, it came as no surprise that this was his coaching style, right? Everybody knew. If you did your homework, you knew this might have happened, that this was his style. He was hard on players. He demanded a lot during the week, coming early, watching film. A lot of attention was put on the diet,
weight checks,
training,
hydration,
off the field,
testing,
recovery. If you did your homework, you knew this was his style. So it's a little hard to understand that this is the only reason why he's been fired here.
Yeah, I just add to this. It's being reported that one of the final straws was him wanting Steve Birnbaum, his captain, to go to the Open Cup game, and upper management saying no. He needs to rest. He's going to stay. And him saying, well, if the head coach can't pick, like, what's going on here, why hire him?
Exactly.
Not let him coach. And to these players who felt like maybe it was too harsh, too professional, you play a game for a living. You're so blessed and fortunate to play a game for a living. Julian Gressel himself said, yeah, maybe he was hard, but he wanted to get the best out of you. Maybe a little self-reflection there.
Players are too pampered sometimes, man. Sometimes they're too pampered. His assistant, Chad Ashton, takes over most likely, according to our Jeff Carlisle, until the end of the season. The All-Star game was announced this Thursday, and it is a rematch Major League Soccer All-Stars versus Liga MX All-Stars. August 10th, but the game will be played in Minnesota. I'm glad this is simple, actually, on ESPN. I'm glad that it's happening again. I think this has to pick up. I think fans liked it. I like the rivalry. What do you make of bringing back Liga MX to play the MLS All-Star game?
Insanely popular. Yeah. So it's going to be here to stay. Right up our alley, right? This is what we're made for. This is a rivalry that sells. I shouldn't even say franchise, even though it sounds like that. But this sells!
More Major League Soccer action this Saturday. Minnesota United will host Sheridan Shaqiri and Chicago Fire. ESPN, ESPN Deportes, also streaming on the ESPN app. And then Sunday doubleheader. Me and her will be on the Inter Miami versus Atlanta United match that starts at 1 p.m. Eastern, followed by Orlando City versus Red Bull New York.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
CONCACAF W Championship draw on Wednesday in Miami. Our very own Pilar Perez was hosting the draw. She did a fantastic job. So, felicidades, congrats, well done to our very own Pilar Perez. Here we go, we have the groups. And for Mexico, it's not gonna be easy. United States, Mexico, Jamaica, Group A with Haiti, and then Canada, Costa Rica, Panama, and Trinidad and Tobago.
Very difficult group.
Group A, group of death, right?
This tournament is in Monterrey. They will have home field advantage, but you did not want to play against the U.S. women's national team if you're Mexico. And we just had Julie Foudy on here last week speaking of how dangerous Jamaica is, how you want to avoid Jamaica in that front line. A very difficult group. Qualifying directly looks like it's going to be a very difficult task for the Mexican national team women.
Yeah, after round-robin group stage play, the two top teams in each group will move on to the semifinals and qualifying directly to the Women's World Cup in 2023. Cristina Alexander with the chances of this Mexican national team.
Guys, it looks like it's going to be a very tough summer for this women's Mexican and national team, and I don't say that lightly. I'm trying to be very realistic here with what's coming up now with this CONCACAF and W Championship, and it's not only because of that rival, of course, the most complicated one that they're going to have with this U.S. women's national team, which we know historically has been very complicated for Mexico, but also because of Jamaica and Haiti. Now, as to the reggae girls, a lot of these players are in the English League, which include names like Chelsea, Tottenham, and Leicester. And this Haiti side, a lot of them also, the vast majority, are players in the French League. So that experience and that toughness that it takes to be a part of the two of the most important leagues in the world, of course, has contributed a lot as to why the Jamaican and the Haitian side are very dangerous, not only for the Mexican side, but also for the U.S. women's national team. And of course, we know that when Monica Vergara was called up to be manager for this Mexican national side, she said that one of her priorities was not only to get back to the international stage, but to really just put in the work to be able to get even to this point. And she said that the way that she can do that is try to get the toughest rivals in friendlies for the Mexican side. Now, we saw on two occasions that Mexico went up against the U.S., 4-0 results in each of those games against the Mexican side, but at the end of the day, it can be a learning experience, as it has been with this women's Liga MX. So I think more than anything, it's the opportunity for Monica Vergara and these players and everybody behind this project to take a look in the mirror and really have so many questions answered as to, have we done enough work for this national team, or do we still need to put more of the grind behind what has been the Women's Liga MX. So that'll be really interesting this summer, guys, and I'm sure we'll be here to talk about it a little bit more.
Cristina, thank you very much. The U.S. Women's National Team will face Colombia twice in June. Friendly matches in Culver City, Colorado, and in Sandy, Utah. The game on June 28th is on ESPN, Herc.
Gotta love it. Got all the best games. It's still a lot of games to come up for Vlatko's team. He's trying out very young players, some of those veteran players itching to get back. You see Alex Morgan banging in those goals. Let's see what happens.
So here we go. International friendly. The U.S. women's national team will play Colombia. That's going to be on a Tuesday, June 28th, 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific on ESPN. If Sebi is watching, he's going to like this topic. America.
He's on vacation. He's not watching.
We'll see. Fifth win in a row. Hosting León, nice W Wednesday night at Estadio Azteca. Fernando Ortiz seems to have found a starting 11 that works. Now América, they're tied for most goals since March 6th and conceded the fewest goals in Liga MX.
What a goal.
This is Fernando Ortiz's team. Sendejas with a fantastic goal. This was drawn, right? This was part of Fernando Ortiz's magic, working his magic a manager.
Oh yeah. That's what he was doing, working his magic as a manager. Okay, where would you like to start with this America team? Because this is essentially the same group that did 73 points with Santiago Solari in a calendar year.
Yes.
Okay? Which is a Liga MX record. It's a very good group. It could be pragmatic. It could be cero brillantes. That means, not spectacular at all. It could be boring to most, but it's effective, okay? As pragmatic and boring as it, it's effective, and they went back to defending, and they're doing it very well. But when Solari was there, they got into a rough patch, and Solari was as much to blame as anybody else. He was putting so much pressure on these players by how he was showing that to the press, how he was showing that pressure, crumbling under pressure to his team, that it was going against them. He's out, they come in, it's still the same team, muscle memory kicks in, and also their calendar has gotten easier. Let's state the obvious here, and then I'll go through it, okay? They played against Michelle Años Chivas, okay?
Yeah.
Not very good team.
Draw.
Toluca, who's been horrible, they won.
Okay. W, yeah.
Necaxa team, that it was a 91st minute goalkeeper error that gave them the win.
Mm.
Okay. A Juarez team who's been awful. And Cholos who've been not great. And then a León team that managed to finish the game miraculously with eight players. I don't know what's going on in León.
We'll talk about that in a second.
It's been a very favorable calendar for Club America, okay. But they've been doing their job.
If you have a favorable calendar, you have to take advantage of it, right?
Correct.
And they are taking advantage of it. I agree with your take on Solari.
Yes.
100%. I disagree with your take that this is a boring team. And what?
No. Their style during the 73 points.
Okay. Like that's because this team under Fernando Ortiz, they're not boring.
No.
They're playing good soccer. Look at the numbers. Mm. They are not Tigres yet. Yet Tigres lost against Necaxa the
Rotation.
Other day.
Rotation.
So I like the way Fernando Ortiz is going back to basics. The fact that he's using one of the best players in Liga MX, Álvaro Fidalgo, as a second holding midfielder next to Richard Sanchez. The fact that Alex Sendejas has found his place in this team on the right-hand side. The fact that Federico Viña starting as a number nine. I know he hasn't scored much, but the way you see him involved in the buildup, that's all on Fernando Ortiz. Why was
and Diego Valdez, the resurgence of Diego.
And Diego Valdez, that's the key. Because you have a playmaker who's making plays. He's scoring, he's assisting, and I'll tell you this. I know Pachuca's looking great. I know Tigres, they look good, even though they lost a few days ago. Yes. But no team will want any part of America come Liguilla time.
No.
No team.
No, because it's, as many have stated in our industry, el animal de Liguilla. They're an animal. They're a beast when it comes to playing these. They know what it's about. There are those teams who just know how to do and how to get it done in this playoff format. They're one of them. I will stress that this is still the same team that had that rough patch with Solari. Still the same team and a very young manager with Ortiz. They are getting their footing, though, and that's a very scary thing for a lot of players.
Now, let's not forget, yes, because Ortiz, this is his first experience as the coach of the first team in Mexico. He had previous experiences in Paraguay, not very successful, but next to him, Raúl Rodrigo Lara, a legend of Club America who knows all about liguillas. That was the big knock on Santiago Solari. He doesn't know how to coach, how to play liguillas. Well, now there's a coaching staff that most likely they do know what they're going to do come liguilla time. So you mentioned León, and we have to talk about León. Ariel Holland resigned for the second time as León manager. This time his resignation was accepted. He didn't want to touch on his relationship with the players, but Herc, it seems like that relationship was not ideal.
So, le tendieron la cama as a phrase.
How do you say that in English?
They made his bed. Pretty much saying that the players tanked to get him out. I do not believe that, but there was a toxic environment there. Created by Holland? Could be. But it needed to be said, and it needed to be get done, and he's out.
It's a shame because he came with high expectations, very successful in South America, and what the León executives wanted was a better style of play. He is now out. León, they are the last passenger, 12th in the league, that would give them a ticket to El Repechaje, the playoffs, but they're not looking good. América is already fifth. Alfonso Davies is CONCACAF's best player. There's no room for debate. He missed the second round of the octagonal, but Canada made it back to the World Cup. They're going to play the World Cup for the first time since 1986. He's going to play their Clásico on Saturday against Borussia Dortmund on ABC. And our very own Archie Rindoud had the chance to have a conversation with Fonzie.
It's Bayern Munich. It means that everyone's got an opinion.
Yeah.
As I'm sure you're well aware by now, even before joining the club. What's your diagnosis as to what went wrong against Villarreal?
I mean, for me, it's football. You know, you go into a game, you know, thinking that you're going to win it, but, you know, things happen. I mean, take nothing from Villarreal. They're a great team, you know, as you can see in the first leg. They can play football. They play football. You know, they rose to the occasion. And, yeah, we knew that it wasn't our best game away from home. And coming back here, you know, we prepared for them. And our mindset was right. I guess, things happen. You know, that little, we had the ball, I think, 70, 60% of the time. We had a lot of crosses, a lot of chances to score. But I mean, you know, we just couldn't do it. You know, they had one break and there you go, punish us at this high level. You know, just one opportunity sets you apart from the rest. And you know, they came out here, they played well, and yeah, we're devastated with the loss. Devastated about the loss, but we keep our head high. You know, we still have something to fight to play for this year, and definitely go again next year. But you know, with more hunger and more fight.
How's it going up against Erling Haaland for you? He's about one of the only players who's as quick as you as well in that team.
Yeah, I mean, he's a big guy, you know. When the ball gets played, it's very hard to muscle him, you know. He's strong. He's also quick as well. So, I mean, we're smart when we defend him. You know, we know that he likes to run in behind. And for us, we just have to stop the ball going behind. We know that can't stop every ball. It's going to happen. But, I think we're gonna do the job.
Is winning the Bundesliga alone enough for Bayern Munich?
No, obviously, you know, winning the Bundesliga is a tremendous, you know, accomplishment. We've won it many times, and obviously we want to keep winning it, and also more and more. So, yeah, for us, we're hungry, we want more, and if we could have added, you know, another two trophies to the cabinet, or even another five, would have been amazing. But for us, it was a long season, and we're hungry to win this title, and we're ready for the fight.
We got to talk about Canada as well.
Sure.
Because you're going to the World Cup.
Yes. Very exciting. I'm happy for that.
And tell me how you felt before that game where you qualified. Because once you're into the game, you know, there's Alfonso, the player, but Alfonso, the fan,
yeah.
What are those hours like before?
Yeah, for me, I mean, you know, it was unfortunate what happened, you know, me not being there with the team, but, you know, yeah, watching the game as a fan, you know, you see, you know, the outside noise when you're not really, you know, part of the team. You see the outside noise, you see the support the team has. And for me, it was nerve-wracking. I mean, I wasn't on the pitch, but I was nervous, you know, for the team, for, you know, for how the game's going to go. We knew that Jamaica was a strong team. We knew the kind of players they have. And, you know, we were motivated because we just came off a loss. I think it was in, I forgot who we played before, but we came off a loss. And we told ourselves we need to win this game. You know, this game's a must win. One win and we're inside. So, yeah, I mean, I sent the boys a little text, good luck. And I just sat down, watched the game, and they put on a brilliant performance.
How was it here? Because I'm imagining you're getting quite a lot of back chat. No names, okay, maybe Thomas Muller, about, oh yeah, when are we ever going to see you at a World Cup? And you must have strode in the next day being like, morning, guys.
Yeah, no, it was, no, you know, they make a little bit of one, two fun, you know, it's all, you know, under control, all respect. So, yeah, you know, they're happy for me, you know, they all say congratulations, you know, they knew, you know, the history, you know, 36 years having made it to a World Cup and now for the first time. So, yeah, I mean, it was a little bit of one, two jokes, but at the end of the day, you know, they all respect it. You know, they know that this tournament is, you know, it's every footballer's dream. Every footballer, you know, wants to play in a World Cup for their country. And yeah, it was really a cool moment for me.
How would you compare the way that Canada play to how you play here with Bayern? There's a bit of a difference in terms of how you're here expected to dominate every opponent, I guess.
Yeah.
How would you compare that?
Yeah, I mean, Bayern, you know, you have, you know, the caliber of players that they have, amazing players, you know, World Cup winner, Champions League winner, you know, many times as well. So, yeah, here, you know, it's just me doing my job, and same with Canada as well. You know, we have some great players as well. And there, it's just me doing my job. You know, wherever the coach posts me, you know, for Canada, I play a little bit higher up the pitch. Here, I play, you know, defense. So, yeah, for me, it doesn't matter. Wherever the coach posts me, wherever I play, I try to do the best as I can.
Talk to me about that goal you scored against Panama. The one where you're out on the touchline. And
yes.
Just as a viewer, I'm thinking, well, there's no danger. Wait, what? What's he done?
I mean, the goal started, you know, Panama had the ball for, I think, a minute or a minute and a half. You know, they're switching the ball back and forth, you know, we're getting a little bit. You know, we knew that we had to win that game. You know, I think it was 1-1 at the time. And me and Tejon actually switched positions. I went to the right side. He was playing on the left. Johnny was playing up top. And the ball got loose in the box. And I knew Johnny knew that I was on the right side. So when he played the ball, he expected me to be there. And fortunately, I was a little bit further back. And as the ball was rolling out, I started running to the ball. And then I saw the defender actually slow down. That's why I picked up pace a little bit more. So when he slowed down, I picked up pace. I slowed down a little bit because I thought he was just going to kick it out. But then when he lifted his I think it was his right foot, I was like, okay, this ball's mine. So I kept it in. I actually looked back at the linesman to see if he put his flag up, but he didn't. So I just ran to goal and I knew Tejon was on the other side, but at that situation, it was 1v1. So, and I was in the box. So I was, to myself, I was like, I have to beat this guy and get a shot on goal. So yeah, when I caught to my left foot, I had one thing in mind, goalkeeper's side. And
The rest
worked out.
So, you're going to be at the World Cup. How do you see that now? What can Canada do?
I mean, the first thing is, you know, we make it, which we're very excited. And yeah, we know this is going to be the biggest test in our history of the country. And, you know, against teams like this, countries like this. You know, it's not going to be easy, but we're going to go there with the mindset. You know, we're here for a reason. We're excited. We're happy to be here, and we show the world what we can do.
Ben?
Let's run it back. Alfonso Davis, best Bet Classica moments. We have an assist. That brilliant, beautiful left foot of his.
Thomas Müller. It's the type of assist. Look at this curling, shaping right onto Thomas Müller's head.
Even I could score with an assist like that.
He's not just all speed. He's not just all 1v1 ability. This man can play a ball. He can strike a ball.
All right, if you like that assist, what about this one?
Leroy
finds Sané and then Robert Lewandowski. That was a fantastic effort by the whole team, not only Fonzie.
It looks simple, right? It's a good entry ball, but these simple things are so difficult to do. Hard, great little entry ball. Leroy Sané with a piece of brilliant. And then Lewandowski doing what he does, just putting it away. Der Clásico, great moment.
Yeah. Then I'm already picturing the connection. Fonzie Raúl, look at him here, defending Erling Haaland.
No, it's the speed, it's the meek, as our good friend Thomas Müller would say. He was like a good 30 yards away from the play. It's Erling Brut Haaland right there. You think he would put this away? Nah, not on Fonzie's watch.
He's played 4 Liga de Clásicas, won them all. And the new edition of the Clásica, Bayern can win the league on Saturday if they beat Dortmund. Coverage starts 11:30 a.m. Eastern. We'll be at the watch party with legend Claudio Pizarro on ESPN+.
You're going to the watch party?
Yeah.
All right.
And then the match starting at noon Eastern on ABC and ESPN Deportes. Parting shots, Fulham, again, promoted. It seems like they get promoted and then relegated. The next season, 2 UN's best national team players, part of that team, Anthony Robinson and Team Ream, they will be playing, hopefully, Premier League starting next season.
Yeah, Anthony Robinson's had a very good season. Tim Ream, who I know I'm one of those guys who's given him a lot of slack with the U.S. men's national, a lot of shtick, I should say. Very good professional. Played almost every game, I believe, for Fulham. And Fulham, the first original America's team. I'm going back to the days of Brian McBride, back to the days of Clint Dempsey, back to the days when Carlos Bocanegra was on Fulham. This was the first team that Americans adopted, or actually the U.S. men's national team supporters adopted in England. They go up again. Credit to where credit is due. Congratulations to everybody down there, or up there.
4 years ago, I was there at the stadium, and they still have Clint Dempsey's banners for every single match.
What's a legend, man?
All right, on Monday, Cristian Roldán, he will play Seattle Pumas for the CONCACAF Champions League final. Remember to download the podcast, subscribe, rate, share with everyone. Football Americas, thanks for having me on your show. Seb will be back on Monday, I believe. Right?
We'll get you back. Seb's on vacation somewhere. I don't know. He's not watching, so it doesn't matter.
Thanks for watching Football Americas. See you next time.